This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Senate's still slogging through amendments on the big budget bill that economic experts say will add trillions to the federal deficit and boost millions of people off health insurance through cuts to Medicaid.
A new estimate from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office predicts some 11.8 million Americans would lose their health coverage over the next decade. Trump insists the Medicaid cuts only target waste, fraud, and abuse.
ABC Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce, part of the plan would end incentives for clean energy and quickly would impose new taxes on wind and solar projects while boosting production of coal, oil, and natural gas. The man who started a brush fire in Idaho, police say, then fatally shot two first responders who showed up to put it out was a transient who now began firing after the firefighters asked him to move his vehicle. The only suspect in the Idaho college student murder case, Brian Koberger, agreeing to plead guilty. He will get life in prison with no chance of parole. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. You have your club
card. On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. During a recent appearance at Fuel Fest, Vin Diesel said he recently spoke with a Universal executive who asked him if they could do another Fast and Furious film, to which the actor said yes, but on three conditions. The conditions were to return the filming to production-starved L.A., embrace the purity of street racing once again, and to have his buddy Paul Walker make an appearance in the film. Walker passed away in 2013 after a high-speed car crash at just 40 years old. Jeff Bezos and Lauren Sanchez's $50 million wedding was the talk of the weekend, but the talk wasn't all good. Charlize Theron spoke during her fifth annual African outreach project in L.A. and said to the crowd, "I think we might be the only people not invited to the most talked-about wedding," at which point the Mad Max Fury Road star said, "That's okay because they suck and we're cool." Two very different events, but a lot less collagen and steroids at Theron's event. For more show is fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lopez leaves Milwaukee.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, basketball. After 7 years with the Milwaukee Bucks, center Brooke Lopez is leaving the team for L.A. Lopez agreeing to a two-year contract with the Los Angeles Clippers worth $18 million. Now, the Bucks have come to terms with three other players, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter, and Taurean Prince. So what's been the difference this offseason for Giannis Antetokounmpo? Bucks reporter Jim Ozarski with the Journal Sentinel.
I think the main difference is this team went from a 58-win team in 2023, top seed in the East, best team in basketball, to a team that had to win 8 straight games and Detroit had the founder to not be the 6th seed. And so what does that mean? They're not rebuilding, they're not tanking, but in Giannis's view, that's not contending. When we had our season ending in that locker room, those guys believe they can win a title.
Baseball, it's the Brewers and the Mets tonight in New York. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Just this one time? Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, breaking down more decisions from Wisconsin Supreme Court with Pat Kreitlow from Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Don't miss it.
Mattenair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low to mid 80s this afternoon. The wind will be northwest at around 5 to 10. Tonight, clear will drop to the mid 60s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a high in the mid to upper 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tracy Ann Mangold, how would you describe what it is that Brian Schimming is caught in the crossfires of?
He's the first paid state chair that they've ever had. And so the belief was that maybe that'll increase his ability to fundraise for the state. Obviously, that has not worked out so well. I've been told that he thinks 4 phone calls a day to fundraise is a lot, which, you know, isn't.
104 might be a good start.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Sturgeon Spirits Distillery founder Carl Lowenstein into the studio. And the 4th of July is fast approaching, so we talk fireworks. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Well, we've got more heat on the way across the state of Wisconsin for a Tuesday. Come on in, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke, and this is the Midwest Farm Report. We are focused in on crops and taking care of our animals when this kind of heat shows up, and we'll address both of those topics as we roll through the hour. Weather-wise, like I said, sunshine on the way today. Highs near 82. Little bit of a breeze out there today out of the northwest, about 5 to 10 miles an hour to hopefully take off a little of the strain. Sunny again tomorrow, 85, before more showers return by the time we get to Wednesday night into Thursday. Take a closer look at that forecast as the morning unfolds. Have you ever thought about dairy as a weight loss tool? Well, I'll tell you what, if you've been on antibiotics, you may not realize what quality dairy might be able to do to restore your stomach to pre-antibiotic health. Stephanie Hoff visited with PhD candidate on the UW-Madison campus that's partnered with UW Dairy Innovation Hub to take a closer look at that. One of the stories on the way. We are keeping an eye on what's happening with the state budget. The Wisconsin Farmers Union expressing their disappointment that some funding was not included in their proposal for the governor to fund the Wisconsin Local Food Purchase Assistance Program. Right now, that program is leaning on federal dollars that are going away. We'll take a closer look at that story. And the latest crop progress report, as well as reaction from Monday's USDA acreage update coming your way with John Heinberg, market advisor, Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joining us live.
Here at the Midwest Farm Report, we are paying attention to what stories you find most interesting. And if you miss it, don't worry, we got you covered. Here are your top 5 stories from this week.
Number 5, Wisconsinites paying more for Independence Day barbecues.
Number 4, high schoolers return home from campus with more possibilities.
Number 3, manpower needed at state's largest farm show.
Number 2, meet the brains behind the horsepower.
And your number 1 listen to story this week, we're all ears for this sweet corn update.
Make sure to continue to follow along with us for all your Wisconsin agriculture news.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Farm organizations do many different things to support our farmers. And I'm Jill Welke from the northern end of the world's longest barn in Eau Claire. And I have the president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, Brad Olson. And along with that support of our farmers, you help to get young farmers involved in so many different ways. And you just let a bunch of our young farmers out to Washington, D.C. What is that called and what was it for?
Well, thanks for having me, Jill. Yeah, it was the YFA Young Leader Trip. Every other year, there's give or take about 25 young farmers, 18 to 35 years old, that go to Washington, D.C. This time we went out, we visited with American Farm Bureau in their office for 2-3 hours. We went and visited USDA, talked to the undersecretary there, and then also went to the Mexican embassy on Tuesday and had about an hour and a half discussion with the Mexican embassy on everything from trade to how agriculture and farming is done in their country. So very interesting. As well as then on Thursday went and seen congressional office, their congressional offices and our senators.
And this spring, I was out to Washington, D.C., and there's always a different kind of vibe and a different kind of buzz out there, what's going on. What were some of the things that you felt were going on that shook themselves to the top and were presented to these young farmers?
Well, it was just an excellent opportunity for them, a number of them, their first time to Washington, D.C., to be able to go see their congressman. So I think we've seen all but one congressman. Everybody got to go see their own and have about a 15 to a half an hour long discussion on policies from anywhere to, you know, whole milk for healthy kids, getting that passed, to wolves, to anything and everything that was going on. And then being able to sit down with Senator Johnson's staff for about a half an hour to 45 minutes, and then Senator Baldwin and her staff for about 40 to 45 minutes. Again, it just showed the outstanding young farmers that we have in the state to be able to walk in and get their points across to our congressmen, even though they haven't, you know, necessarily seen them. A lot of them not even the first time they've met their congressman face to face. So just an excellent opportunity for our young people. And again, what a great job they did representing Wisconsin agriculture across the board. If it was, you know, we had dairy farmers, we had crop farmers, we had lenders, agronomists, all kinds of different farming aspects were represented within that group of young farmers.
And now, along with the presentations from these young farmers and getting into these offices of their representatives, did the young farmers come out with a little bit of starstruck, or were they able to really relate to what's going on out there?
Really were able to relate to what was going on out there. Like everything else, you know, they were told going in, if you have a story, there's nothing like your own story to be able to tell about something, right? You know, they were just reinforced, I'll say, going in that these are just, they're just, our representatives are just people to go in and have a conversation with them. They want to hear what it is we have to say. So, yeah, no need to be starstruck or anything like that. Just go in, get your points across. You know, if you're done in 20 minutes instead of a half an hour, that's okay.
And now you've been out there a few times and presented a few times different things. What about what you accomplished out there?
So I had an interview with Spectrum TV out there when most of them were at their congressional offices, just talking about the fact that the aging farmer population is now up over, the average age of the farmer is over 58 years old. They were having a Senate hearing on that Wednesday when we were out. Wednesday when we were out there. It is something to be worried about when we look at the average age of the farmer at 58 years old, and only 8% of today's farmers are under 35 years old. So when we look at that, it is a national issue. This is not something to be looked upon lightly and say it doesn't matter. It does matter. We have an aging population of farmers out there and a very small group coming behind them. So working to figure out a solution to get more people into this business is very, very important.
And from the Farm Bureau Federation standpoint, do you have some ideas that you presented?
Well, a new farm bill would certainly help. If there was an easy answer to this, we'd have had it some time ago. It's going to take a lot of work and a lot of cooperation by everybody to make this work and to figure out what the solutions are.
And we're visiting with Brad Olson. He's the president of the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation. Well, let's bring you back into Wisconsin. And what about that June board meeting? What's on the agenda?
Well, we've got a number of committees that we need board members appointed to, anywhere from Board of Visitors for extension to representatives on the U.S. Dairy Export Council, as well as U.S. Grain, along with some others, and then there will be the typical things of just discussion of how things are going in the state as well as how things are going nationally on a variety of issues.
And looking at this June board meeting, usually a pretty good attendance, and everybody has a chance to speak what they think is really important?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. Everybody has ample time to give their opinions. And then this month we actually have the Growmark board coming in, or members of the Growmark board, which we are affiliated with. So they come in every June meeting for Farm Bureau. They come in and give an update of how things are going at Growmark. And I'll say from Wisconsin standpoint in Growmark, we're fortunate to have Kevin Malsheen as their CAO from Southeast Wisconsin down there. So a home state individual running the organization is the chairman of the board there.
What about any other contacts that you chat with in June? Because you have your convention and gathering usually in the wintertime. Does anything come up when it's June time to think about what's going forward?
Well, it seems almost early, right? But that annual meeting in December, preparations are underway already for the annual meeting in this December. It's one of those things that next year's preparation starts just about at the close of the year before. So certainly not into it hard yet, but getting speakers lined up, getting everything lined up to be in place so that it runs as smooth as it possibly can in December.
Well, it's always good to catch up halfway through the year for the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation and what some of those projects that are going on, whether it's the youth flying into Washington, D.C. and getting some exposure, which I really appreciated. There's a lot of stuff going on out in D.C. Looking ahead into the wrap-up and that annual meeting. A lot of things going on for the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation from President Brad Olson. And I'm Jill Welke from the northern end of the world's longest barn here in Eau Claire.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as ag meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
This is news from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Distinguished television journalist Bill Moyers died June 26th at age 91. In his long career, he earned 30 Emmy Awards, served as President Lyndon Johnson's press secretary, and was a stalwart voice for democracy and democracy reform. On Being a Reporter, Moyers told a Chautauqua Institution audience in 2016, "I was hooked, and in one way or another, I've continued to engage the issues of money and power, equality and democracy over a lifetime spent at the intersection between politics and journalism." From 1964 to 1967, he served as Johnson's press secretary during the passage of the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act. He was instrumental in the creation of public broadcasting, where he later reported for almost a decade. He wrote scores of commentaries for CBS and NBC and produced 70 documentaries for PBS. Democracy and democracy reform appears frequently in Moyers' work, including his Moyers on Democracy podcast and a companion book of speeches. When Moyers retired in 2017, he wrote, "Please remain vigilant and engaged as citizens in the civic and political life of your community and our country. Democracy is fragile, and no one can say with certainty that it can withstand the manifold risks to which it is now exposed." We've linked to his farewell essay and more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the interview system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll continue to monitor the budget process both in D.C. and Madison. And what's worse for the holidays, ketchup or mustard? Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. News from the Center, WRCE.
877-301-3276 if you've got weather observations for me. I can tell you that sunshine is going to be a part of your Tuesday. That's really the only element I see. High temperatures, right around 82 degrees with winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, down to 64, give the cows a little bit of a break. Then on Wednesday, more sunshine returns, a little bit warmer, highs around 85 with a little bit of a breeze. Wednesday night into Thursday, that's when we start to see another front move into Wisconsin. Honestly, it could goof up your plans for outdoor activities if it comes to 4th of July celebrations. Starting Wednesday night, about a 20% chance of showers or thunderstorms, probably in the wee early morning hours. Overnight lows on Wednesday, 66. Then Thursday, another sliver of a chance of rain showers in the morning. High temperatures on Thursday, around 86. Then on Independence Day Friday, a 20% chance of showers. Otherwise, a sunny, hot day. Highs on Friday expected to be around 90 degrees. Back with more weather-related news and how it's impacting our Wisconsin farmers. That's next.
Our next episode with the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association takes us to Heidi's Happy Acres in Monroe, where ears of sweet corn are ripening. Brian and Heidi Kent started this agritourism destination during the pandemic, and Brian says WADA played a big role in how the family was able to expand their offerings to the public.
They're there to help, to give guidance, be the resource to help, you know, if you want to keep doing more and more and more in the agritourism, you know, because Heidi's really branched out, you know, beyond just the event in October. You know, she has the corn maze now. School events are out here, wagon rides, her sunflower maze, you know, her the fall festival. She has her pumpkin patch. You know, there's just so many things now in the you know, WADA's really helped out with putting a lot of those things together.
If you're looking to generate an additional revenue stream on your farm, join WADA at gowiagtourism.com.
Thanks, Stephanie. I appreciate all the updates I'm getting from you on your talk text line this morning. Remember, that number is 877-301-FARM, 877-301-3276. Yesterday, up by north of Burnett, they picked up over an inch of rain. Butch said they got missed, but that's a good thing because he's needing to make hay. Thank you to Rocky from Taychita for sending me some beautiful pictures of what he saw at the ball field last night as far as beautiful clouds. So, like I said, weather-wise, it's going to stay hot and sticky today and tomorrow. Chance of rain moving back in the forecast Wednesday night into Thursday. Now, it looks like a revised forecast, less of an opportunity for rain on Friday. We'll kind of wait and see. It is all we're only Tuesday. You know, our Wisconsin farmers are keeping an eye on this weather as well. One of them is Anastasia Kurth. She is one of our University Extension Regional Crops and Soils Educators. And she says, well, you may think this heat and humidity are good for crops. Not necessarily.
And typically when we see heat, there's a lot of water loss. So the high temperatures boost evapotranspiration, which is evaporation and transpiration from our crops, which is a bad thing because our crops need that moisture during this vegetative state of growth. However, we were lucky this heat spell that it was humid. We did have quite a bit of rain, especially this last week. And it really saved our crops. So if it's hot and dry, that's when we see the most problems. But when it's hot and wet like this, we don't see nearly as much damage to our crops.
Again, Anastasia Kurth, one of our regional crops and soils educators, she said that there are some things that you have to keep in mind, though, as this heat builds. That means our insect populations are starting to build and weeds are thriving, too.
We have had some reported sightings of the fungal disease in neighboring states. So we're going to have to just keep an eye on it here in Wisconsin. And like I say, I've said before, just scout your fields. That is the most important thing you can do. Be aware of what's going on in your fields. Take a walk, you know, like a good 20 feet into your field past those end rows. Get in there and just see if there's anything going on. Being vigilant of what's happening in your field is most important.
Agreed. Anastasia Kurth, one of our regional crops and soils educators, just kind of reminding you about some of the things you already know. Keeping an eye on things, whether it's your 100-acre field or it's your quarter-acre garden. Walking out there and seeing what's down under the green leaves can make a big difference. Keep using the talk text line. I'm paying attention. 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Could consuming dairy help you trim your waistline? We're talking about it.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie sat down with economist Benga Adjelor, talking about what the impacts will be to rural healthcare with the current budget bill working its way through Washington.
Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the health care that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
What's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal, is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's gonna, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her.
You've been listening to a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, which airs across the Civic Media Radio Network weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the full broadcast lineup at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Senate's still slogging through amendments on the big budget bill that economic experts say will add trillions to the federal deficit and boost millions of people off health insurance through cuts to Medicaid.
A new estimate from the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office predicts some 11.8 million Americans would lose their health coverage over the next decade. Trump insists the Medicaid cuts only target waste, fraud, and abuse.
ABC Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce, part of the plan would end incentives for clean energy and quickly would impose new taxes on wind and solar projects while boosting production of coal, oil, and natural gas.
The man who started a brush fire in Idaho, police say, then fatally shot two first responders who showed up to put it out was a transient who now began firing after the firefighters asked him to move his vehicle. The only suspect in the Idaho college student murder case, Brian Koberger, agreeing to plead guilty. He will get life in prison with no chance of parole. This is ABC News.
Lopez leaves Milwaukee.
Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports, basketball. After 7 years with the Milwaukee Bucks, center Brook Lopez is leaving the team for L.A. Lopez agreeing to a two-year contract with the Los Angeles Clippers worth $18 million. Now, the Bucks have come to terms with three other players, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter, and Taurean Prince. So what's been the difference this offseason for Giannis Antetokounmpo? Bucks reporter Jim Ozarski with the Journal Sentinel.
I think the main difference is this team went from a 58-win team in 2023, top seed in the East, best team in basketball, to a team that had to win 8 straight games and Detroit had the founder to not be the 6th seed. And so what does that mean? They're not rebuilding, they're not tanking, but in Giannis's view, that's not contending. When we had our season ending in that locker room, those guys believe they can win a title.
Baseball, it's the Brewers and the Mets tonight in New York. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Maggie Dawn.
On the next show, what happens if 20 million people lose their health insurance? Kristen Krall from Fair Share America joins Maggie to talk about the Stop the Billionaire Giveaway bus tour.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
It is going to be mostly sunny today with a high in the low to mid 80s this afternoon. The wind will be northwest at around 5 to 10. Tonight, clear will drop to the mid 60s. Tomorrow will be mostly sunny with a high in the mid to upper 80s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills and I play safety. CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a conversation from a recent episode of the Busted Pencils podcast, talking about how AI or artificial intelligence is being utilized in rural classrooms.
I mean, really, I think it was reading so many of these books, like educational, like more theory-based books. It's like we kind of put theory into action. So it was kind of like a happen chance where we stumbled across, you know, Khan Academy with their Khanmigo, like their AI tutor bot. There's a lot more like technology sources, like embedding AI into them. So we started to look at what would be the capabilities of a classroom if we let some of the tier one instruction be turned over to AI. So where students are actually receiving learning. I mean, as adults, if I want to learn how to change a faucet, I go and watch a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Kids, this generation of kids, they want to learn via technology. They want to learn via videos. And so I think it was just like this perfect storm of like students being disengaged. You know, I was an instructional coach and associate principal. I've sat through my fair share of lessons that I, as the adult, was bored. So it's like all these problems of practice that we were trying to like find a way to solve. And it's like, well, we have something right in our hands. And so what would it look like if we could turn over some of that tier one instruction to a tutor bot or to personalize learning via an online platform, and let the teachers do the depth of knowledge and challenge-based learning and really bringing in those real-world connections.
Tell us, rural Wisconsin. So this is happening then in rural Wisconsin.
It's happening. I mean, we have schools that are, I mean, we started off as like a little pilot, and now it's like, I feel like every day it's like, what's going on? Like, what is going on? And in this idea of rethinking or rebuilding like public education, I think each district that we work with kind of faces their own problem of practice. We have a district that couldn't really hire a physics teacher. So how can they take a teacher that has no physics background and use AI to truly help teach the kids? We have districts who are like, you know what? No, we're going to teach math, science, ELA, all the content. We're going to teach that, and we're going to reduce that time down so the kids get it all.
You've been listening to a portion of the Busted Pencils podcast. To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to our website, civicmedia.us/shows.
News from the center, WRCE.
You can stretch the field.
Big acreage report out from the U.S. Department of Agriculture on Monday. More corn acres, fewer soybean acres. Not necessarily a surprise, but definitely a driver in the marketplace. John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, is going to break it down for us on a Tuesday morning. Welcome back, everybody. I am the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report on this, the first day of July. Can you believe it? Actually, kind of a big day for Wisconsin on this day. Let's see where I can start. On this day in 1899 in Janesville, Wisconsin, the Gideons were formally organized. Have you ever thought about that? I don't even know if they do it anymore. There used to be a little Bible when you went to a hotel room that was always in kind of one of the drawers, usually near the bed. Well, that started with the Gideons. They started distributing Bibles, Psalms, and New Testaments to hotels, the armed forces, and young people on this day back in 1899. It all started in Janesville, Wisconsin. On this day in 1863, the Battle of Gettysburg started out in Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin troops were there. The Iron Brigade, which included the 2nd, 6th, 7th Wisconsin Infantry Regiments, were all there, as well as the 3rd, 5th, and 26th Wisconsin Infantry Regiments. So things started at the Battle of Gettysburg today on this day back in 1863. On this day in 1959, Circus World Museum opened to the public for the very first time. It was deeded debt-free to the state and open to the public as a historical and educational facility. That was on this day back in 1959. Some of you may remember on this day in 1967, sale of margarine becomes legal. Yeah, first day that it was legal to purchase oleomargarine in Wisconsin. For decades, it was considered a contraband spread. That happened on this day, 1967. A bunch of happy birthdays today. Happy birthday to Blondie, singer-songwriter Debbie Harry is 80 years young today. Dan Aykroyd turned 73. The bombshell Pamela Anderson, still probably best known for Baywatch, 58. And Liv Tyler, Steven Tyler's baby girl, turns 48. And now you know. Do you believe that you can remedy medical issues with food? Well, more and more consumers do believe that at least it's got an influence, and that's driving research on the UW-Madison campus, funded in part by the Dairy Innovation Hub. Stephanie Hoff joins us now with a story about something that may be a key to dairy consumption, dairy opportunity, if you're someone that's been on antibiotics for a while. She explains.
What if dairy could help you keep a slim waistline? Karen Antunes is a PhD candidate in the Nutritional Science Department at UW-Madison. She's working with the UW Dairy Innovation Hub to figure out if colostrum can prevent obesity when taken after antibiotics. I'll let her explain the research.
Usually when we take antibiotics when we are children, this can damage our gut bacteria. And when we damage this gut bacteria, it's really hard to recover what we had. And that changed my lead to obesity later on in life, yes.
Part of your work through the UW Dairy Innovation Hub, you're looking to see if the dairy industry can help prevent long-term obesity.
Yes, exactly. And most specifically, using bovine colostrum as a tool to prevent that obesity.
And you did it in mice. Was it successful?
Yeah, it was pretty successful. And the changes were significant. We saw a reduction in body fat gain when we gave bovine colostrum to the animals right after antibiotic compared to the group that only received antibiotic, and also improving the quality of the gut bacteria, and not only acting in the bacteria but also improving our gut health, reducing leaky gut, for example. So after we finished the treatment, we kept it in a high fat diet that we call a Western diet. So basically a diet with no care, not looking at nutrition labels, and they were able to gain less fat than the other group.
Wow, the ones that had the colostrum, yes, gained less fat. So what were the ratios that you were using? Like, if we put this into human perspective, what are the amounts that they were taking and given?
They only took, right after the antibiotic treatment, 1 cup of colostrum a day, if you convert to human sizing.
If humans were doing it, it'd be about a cup of colostrum a day for how long?
For only 3 weeks after.
Every day?
Yes, but you don't have to keep the consumption, but you have to take right after the antibiotic treatment.
How do people react to having to drink colostrum?
In my case, for our animals, we do just like was humans. So like we pasteurize the colostrum, not the same type of pasteurization that is done with milk, because as probably a lot of people know, the colostrum will change texture. So we wanted to preserve the liquid texture. So we did slow pasteurization with a reduced temperature, and we're able to preserve the form and the benefits of colostrum.
Does it work later in life?
Our study, it was with early life, because the early life damage is harder to reverse. So we wanted to see the extreme situation. But yes, I believe that later in life would also benefit the gut microbiome.
Does it matter the type of antibiotics that they were given? Or
most to all antibiotics, they are here to help us and kill the bad bacteria, but they also kill a lot of the good bacteria. So it doesn't matter. All of them will create a damage in our gut microbiome.
So you're trying to use dairy to rebuild the healthy gut. Like you said, it worked in mice. What's the next step?
The next step is get approval to perform the study in humans and hopefully repeat the same successful result.
Have you gotten any feedback from folks either at the Dairy Symposium or in the industry that are interested in this?
A lot of people get very surprised by the use of colostrum and also the impact of antibiotic, but the response is always really positive, and right now we are very close to publish the study. Yeah, I think this is the feedback that we always get, very positive.
So should people start going out and buying colostrum?
Let's wait the research, and I know that colostrum is becoming really trendy right now. And at the moment, we still have a lot of human trials to be done. So I would say the key message is that not only colostrum, but dairy, it has immense benefits to your gut. That's the area that I study. And not only gut microbiome, but if you have issue with leaky gut, and research is coming out right now showing the benefits and how good it is to your health.
And there you have it from Karen Antunes. She's a PhD candidate in the Nutritional Science Department at UW-Madison, working with the UW Dairy Innovation Hub to see how pasteurized colostrum can improve gut health after taking antibiotics and reduce the risk of obesity later in life. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
There you go. Dairy connected your diet in a whole new way. Thank you, Stephanie. Well, farmers are connected to the land and paying attention to their crops. The weekly crop progress report was released yesterday, and it showed although we've picked up the heat we have been missing, the quality of our crop has gone down just a little bit. 75% of our corn this week called good to excellent. That's down a percentage point. 73% of our soybeans, good to excellent. That's unchanged. 72% of our wheat, good to excellent. That's down 3 percentage points. Same thing with oats. 85% called good to excellent. That's down 2 percentage points. So something we've got to keep an eye on. Markets in overnight electronic trade this morning. Right now, it looks like things are a little on the quiet side. Dow Jones Industrial Average this morning is a little bit lower. Right now, December new crop corn is down 6 at 419. November soybeans down 7.5, 1019. July wheat currently unchanged, 528. Dairy had a pretty big day yesterday. Barrel cheese was up 3, 169.5. 40-pound block cheese, a dime stronger at 172, while AA butter gained 3.75 cents at 260 a pound. The August class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up 4, 1874. September closed 38 cents stronger at 1919 a hundredweight. Well, yesterday was the big USDA acreage report. Showed about a 5% increase in U.S. corn acres, about a 4% decrease in U.S. soybean acres. That's some of the news that's driving our market this morning. We're talking about it next with John Heinberg, market advisor, Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
This is news from the Setter, WRCE.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Environmental groups say the Midwest grid operator, MISO, is pushing an emergency energy plan that discriminates against wind and solar, the two cheapest ways to produce energy in our state. The plan favors fast-tracking construction of gas-burning power plants at the expense of clean energy projects. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission rejected a similar plan from MISO last month, but environmental groups say this one is even worse, with few guardrails to ensure fossil fuel projects are actually needed. Once again, Wisconsin had the biggest wild turkey season in North America. More than 50,000 wild turkeys were harvested in our state this spring. The Department of Natural Resources reintroduced the birds into our ecosystem in 1976 and has been managing the hunt ever since. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tracy Ann Mangold, how would you describe what it is that Brian Schimming is caught in the crossfires of?
He's the first paid state chair that they've ever had. And so the belief was that maybe that'll increase his ability to fundraise for the state. Obviously, that has not worked out so well. I've been told that he thinks 4 phone calls a day to fundraise is a lot, which, you know, isn't.
104 might be a good start.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, breaking down more decisions from Wisconsin Supreme Court with Pat Kreitlow from Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. News from the Center, WRCE.
That's 800-334-9779. Their website is totalfarmmarketing.com, and we welcome him in on a Tuesday here on the Midwest Farm Report. So, John, let's go to that USDA acreage report. I don't know that anybody was really surprised yesterday by the numbers. What did you see, and how did the market react?
Yeah, I would agree with that. The report had a lot a build up for not much response when the market came, when the numbers actually came out here yesterday. And, you know, earlier in the planting season, I would have been one on the table saying that, hey, we're going to probably get some more corn acres in the USDA. It was pegging in March just because of the way things were rolling. But then those rains started to hit those southern plains, and that just, you could just tell things weren't getting put together in that regard. So, you know, we saw a little bit of a reduction in both corn and soybean acres yesterday off of those March totals. But both of them were very, very close to expectations. So with that, that the market really just didn't handle it in terms of any major price movements. It was kind of priced in, and here we go from there, we move on. I mean, you know, the only thing that was a little bit of a disappointment, maybe that a little bit of addition of wheat acres, and then again over in the grain stock side, you know, corn grain stocks right in line with expectations, so nothing there to move the market. Soybeans had a little bit of a disappointment, finding an extra 28 million bushels in the market thought. That's pressured old crop bean prices a little bit yesterday. And then again, on the wheat side too, we saw a little bit bigger buildup of grain stocks and wheat. And I think that's just something to kind of keep a little bit of lid on the price, especially here in the, as we're getting into the harvest window as well, bringing supplies on board. So, you know, it was a report that typically brings a lot of volatility and price movement. Didn't really get that yesterday just because the numbers are fairly in line with expectations. Now, we got some pretty good weakness in the corn and soybean markets this morning that's strictly tied to those crop ratings. As we saw, that corn crop jumped 3% in the good to excellent category, and the market was anticipating a sideways move. So with crop 73% good to excellent, Wisconsin at 76% good to excellent, we're seeing some good price pressure here in that corn market that pushes over into that soybean market here this morning, just setting us up for the morning weakness.
You know, it's been a while, John. John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, live here on the Midwest Farm Report. It's been a while since we talked about some of the markets that turned to corn as a fueling source, namely ethanol. Let's talk about that. I don't want to blindside you, but when it comes to no change as far as international needs and markets are concerned about that, well, how have we been doing as far as our crush on ethanol and using some of our products here at home?
Yeah, the ethanol grind's been very, very good and running well above last year's pace. And we're really close to where the USDA target is on the ethanol grind, maybe a little bit heavier than the USDA's targeting. So we'll see if there's any demand adjustments on that old crop side as we get close to the end of the marketing year on August 30th. But right now, it's been a very good a source of demand. We've seen those ethanol producers continue to kind of bid up a little bit, trying to find some, you know, keep supplies going and get themselves covered here going forward. And that's been one of the, again, one of the bright spots on the old crop side has been that demand between either exports or the ethanol side, where we're probably still going to see some further adjustments on that July WASDE report in terms of bringing the pilot supply of corn in lower from the old crop supplies, as we got to see some demand probably get raised again for both ethanol and definitely for exports.
All right. Well, speaking of exports, let's transition to another newsmaker that was being made yesterday in the livestock market. U.S. Department of Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins announcing that we are now going to slowly start to allow live animals back into the United States. We had stopped that movement to protect our cattle industry primarily from New World screwworm. What's going on with this one, John, and how's the market view it?
Yeah, we'll see what the market wants to do with this today. I'm assuming it'll probably put some pressure on those feeder cattle prices to some extent. Now, we're not talking a full open border, and we bring a lot of Mexican feeder cattle into the feedlots, but we're going to go, the USDA is going to start a plan starting on Monday. They're going to be slowly opening some of the different port points or the border points where these cattle can come across, so they can obviously see the cattle come across, monitor what's happening in terms of that New World screwworm and then the infestation that could get into the United States. So it's going to be still a very, very controlled process. But we're going to start seeing some of those cattle come across the border. You know, the cattle supplies continue to stay extremely tight, especially in that feeder cattle side, and that trickles into what's in the feedlots here going well into 2026. So it's something I think need to maybe happen to maybe keep cattle prices in check, or at least meat prices in check, as we continue to see strong demand and strong, you know, higher costs for those carcass cuts. So it's going to be something we'll have to watch. And I think today we could see some impact on the feeder cattle market. You know, it's just obviously bringing more supply in, so that could pressure prices. You know, we got a market already that's kind of looking tired at this time frame. You know, had put some nice highs in. We fell apart a little bit in terms of price. We're starting to climb again. So We'll have to see how this market wants to handle it. It's been a long trade in this cattle market where realistically we've been on an up climb since the COVID lows of 2020 as we move to these historical highs on these tight cattle supplies.
It does beg the question, though, of it bringing volatility into the marketplace, going to start to let foreign animals into the United States. That just feels like a looming headline, John.
It does. Again, I mean, obviously the control of this parasite or this pest is going to be just a key piece, because we do not want to see this get into the U.S. herd at all. We had that one day of a rumor that it happened in Missouri, and market and cattle prices were all over the map that day. You know, so there's a lot of concern there regarding that and what could be the impact in terms of the cattle market overall. You know, USDA's just announced also yesterday another $8.5 million to be put towards this program of trying to control this parasite or this pest. So it's going to be still one of those things that's going to be on the headlines and closely watched by the cattle industry in terms of keeping this new world screwworm out of the U.S. cattle herd.
And meanwhile, keep an eye on currency. Dollar down again this morning, you said.
Yeah, U.S. dollar continues to fall, now trading to February at 2022 levels. You know, and the thing is, it should be a support. It maybe has been a support to the commodity prices. We really haven't seen a whole lot, at least in terms of grain prices and support in that regard. But I think that's one of the factors. We've seen the milk market kind of turn around here, too, recently. Talk of more demand kicking in on the export front. And again, that U.S. dollar makes those U.S. prices in terms of commodities more available to the world. And that's one of the things we need here, as we just need to continue to see that demand for our products.
John Heinberg, Market Advisor, Total Farm Marketing in West Bend, joining us live right here on the Midwest Farm Report. Glad you're along with us.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
This fall, there's only one place to be, Camp Randall Stadium. Wisconsin football returns with can't-miss matchups, including Maryland, Iowa, Washington, and more. From the first touchdown to jump around and the celebration of the fifth quarter, experience the traditions and unforgettable memories that make Wisconsin football so special. Single-game tickets are now on sale. Lock in your spot today by visiting uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Wisconsin football game day starts here. We'll see you at Camp Randall.
Update to the National Action Plan for Safeguarding Children in Agriculture, today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community, and while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Circumstances change, which is why the National Children's Center for Rural Agricultural Health and Safety in Marshfield, Wisconsin, updated a national action plan created in 1996. Center Director Andrea Swenson says the document was last revised in 2012.
Agriculture continues to change and progress, and we reviewed the plan and thought we needed to update as those changes happen. So we incorporated several new topics into the plan, such as automated agricultural production practices, new technologies, changing organizational and public policies, environmental exposures, and extreme weather.
Swenson says the revised plan has multiple goals, 7 in fact. However,
the main goal for the National Action Plan is to provide just an updated framework that protects the safety, health, and well-being of children who live, work, and visit farms and ranches in the United States. With this National Action Plan, we hope to create a roadmap for individuals and organizations to contribute both collectively and collaboratively towards achieving our main goals.
We'll drill down a little deeper into the revised action plan in tomorrow's show. Meanwhile, you can download a copy of it through the link on the show info page at NorthShoreProductions.com. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Sturgeon Spirits Distillery founder Carl Lowenstein into the studio. And the 4th of July is fast approaching, so we talk fireworks. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh, hold on. Just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
The Joint Finance Committee was leaked that they intend to cut $87 million from the UW system budget. And so we put this out on our socials last night, and today the Joint Finance Committee decided to pull that from the agenda. Because apparently, from what I'm told, Republican legislators got a lot of calls. When the truth is disseminated and people react, results can happen.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local civic media radio station, and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The Senate still voting in an overnight session that is dragged into a morning session. Republican leaders buying time as they search for ways to secure enough support for President Trump's massive spending plan. The president today is set to visit what's become known as Alligator Alcatraz, a detention center built on the site of an old airport in the Florida Everglades. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says it will eventually be able to hold about 5,000 people.
It's a massive runway, and, you know, there's not a lot of buildings out there, but there's a lot of concrete. And so these guys set up this whole thing within a matter of days.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says he will be in the United States next week for talks with senior members of the Trump administration. Officials in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, say the suspect in the ambush killing of two firefighters this week had wanted to be a firefighter himself. They also say he was a transient who was living in his car. This is ABC News.